I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
22 days. If that phrase means nothing to you, I wouldn't blame you. But if you live in the Northern California area, you will recognize the reference, obscure as it might be even at the outset. This is the amount of time that a 34-year-old woman named Sherry Papini was missing before reemerging back into local society, the alleged victim of an abduction. Last year, Hulu released a documentary called Perfect Wife, The Mysterious Disappearance of Sherry Papini. This documentary chronicled the perspective of husband Keith Papini, along with the machinations of local law enforcement, local reactions, and subsequent confession, trial, sentencing, and fallout. Now, a secondary documentary has arisen, this time containing the commentary, statements, and confessions of Sherry Papini herself, along with her sister-in-law, parents, and the federal-level law enforcement officers who are now allotted the freedom to speak about the case, as they were not prior to this. Oh, and not to mention a therapist and Papini's lawyers. Now, on the local level, to even bring up the things in this second documentary evokes passionate reactions from people here. But I do think the latest offering has a few interesting nuggets in it, both in favor of Papini's narrative and others that are appallingly contradicting. I'm reviewing it here because it's part of Northern California history, and I have a few questions out of the gate. Not that anybody answers to me, for sure. So today, I'll talk about Sherry Papini, Caught in the Lie, on box number 7. November 2nd, 2016, Keith Papini came home to find that his wife, Sherry Papini, was missing. Using the iPhone tracking software, he was able to locate her phone about a mile down the road, and there he found it, seemingly laid on the ground, the headphones neatly laid on top, and a tuft of blonde hair contained, sort of tangled in the middle. And while I will not cover every aspect of the story, it did involve a gargantuan movement of support, posters, signs, footwork, searches, and a community outcry that was unusually high. And of course, as I vent my spleen about this subject as well, there was the usual band of idiot savants online. As I've said before, every armchair, flatfoot, Columbo, Adrian Monk, Kojak, Sherlock Holmes, and quasi-clairvoyant toolbag on the face of the planet that had drawn a bead on the time, place, motive, means, and potential disposal sites that a clearly homicidal, at least to them, Keith Papini possessed. They were all so sure that their self-awarded PhDs in criminal mind reruns had solved the case. And this is the bad that goes along with the good about online crowdsourcing. Valuable as it might be, hopefully when AI is finished doing what it was intended to do, destroy the middle class income, it can also crowd out the voluminous stupidity of these Dunning-Kruger morons. Anyway, enough of my rant. 22 days later, Thanksgiving Day as a matter of fact, a distraught Sherry Papini was reported to be injured and partially bound by a passing motorist having presumably either been released or escaped from her captors. As she entered the community again, she proclaimed that she had been abducted by two Hispanic women who reportedly beat, branded, and abused her. Counseling was involved. Keith was happy to have his family together, trauma notwithstanding, even though an online maelstrom fingered him as a killer just days before. So he sort of suffered a twofold trauma here. I just can't drop it. Nearly 4 years would go by with a mildly suspicious public occasionally seeing Papini around town with her family. Most of us did run into them. In August of 2020, federal agents questioned Papini again, who had already received $30,000 by this time in compensation from the California Victim Compensation Board. They were attempting to clarify her story. In March of 2022, Papini would be presented with evidence that her story was a fabrication, and that, in short, that she had planned a fake abduction with former boyfriend James Reyes, and then, when the momentum of her disappearance became too stringent to hide, asked him to brand her and put bruises on her body to lend credence to an abduction story. Ultimately, to make a long story short, she signed a plea deal admitting as such, and in September of 2022, she was sentenced to 18 months in prison and ordered to pay $300,000 in restitution to include the investigative costs involved. The Perfect Wife documentary essentially told this story, featuring Keith and local investigative arms of Shasta County. It told a straightforward story about the processes and also, in my opinion, shows a visibly PTSD'd Keith suffering the side effects of being a community pariah at the hands of lynch mob Facebook goons. At the end of the documentary, an odd addition to the show, and one in which the show implies that Sherry Papini was slowly poisoning her children via osmosis, utilizing rubbing alcohol as an amelioration for their, incremental or childhood sickness. But I'll come back to this at the end. So now there's this new documentary, one in which Sherry Papini did participate. She refused or did not return calls to participate in the original one. And we see her seated at the beginning under the glare of lights and making preparatory gestures that imply a revelatory set of statements are going to come forth. And in effect, they do. Sherry introduces herself and proceeds to, quote unquote, explain her side of the story. Now, I did managed to find myself compelled to listen. Now, I'm going to cover a few points. Warning, there are spoilers in here if you have not watched it and intend to. First and foremost, she does not deny lying. She simply shifts the motivation for lying and attempts to craft a plausible argument. Now, I'm not here to pronounce judgment outright because no matter how bad the online hatred for Sherry Papini remains, she has paid the price legally in terms of loss, incarceration, and the continuing monetary problems and obligations, not to mention basically the loss of her family. But I get it. She did a thing. That doesn't mean she needs to spend the rest of her life avoiding the bloodhounds of a raging public the rest of her life as well. I just want to talk about the plausible versus what is improbable to me, a guy who I consider myself with normal intelligence, and if I'm paying attention, the ability to weigh conflicting signals. She admits readily that she engaged in an emotional affair at the outset with her ex, James Reyes, and that she did have plans to dash out and meet him in some form. She states that her marriage was not going well and that Keith was controlling and all-encompassing. And I'm not going to speak about her marital claims because that's their business, but I am speaking to the protracted plans that emerged because of these allegations. In short, she claims that James Reyes front-loaded their planned rendezvous by coming up unannounced and abducting her while she was on her run and then holding her hostage for that 22-day period. That her branding was involuntary and all bruising and subjugating abuses were overtly criminal. So her summation in this documentary is this: She made up the lie about being abducted by two Hispanic women in order to protect her family from a contingency threat from James, who she said would hurt them if she gave him up. In the middle of this documentary, her psychologist, Dr. Stephen Diggs, makes many professional claims that Sherry's experience could manifest itself exactly the way it developed. Take it for what it's worth. Sherry's original attorney weighs in, and her high-profile attorneys also come on to show support. I'm not going to go into their dialogue pretty much, because that's what attorneys do. They just defend. The primary FBI agent on the case, Denise Farmer, makes an early appearance to solidify the case against Papini, and this is to the producer's credit. And she showed things behind the scenes that were not presented in the docuseries a year before, because apparently federal agents were not at any sort of liberty to disclose their processes even at that time. Papini's prison mate makes an appearance as well and speaks highly of her current story and states that any flaws in her story wouldn't have passed the prison test, as it were. She thinks she's legit, and this is, of course, accompanied with pictures of her posing with her prison mates before she got out of prison. Take that for what it's worth. It must be said that despite Papini appearing in the documentary, the filmmakers clearly did not enter this production with a mission to simply vindicate her just because she cooperated. In fact, by letting her speak, it sometimes becomes more problematic and not less. So here are some of the issues that arise in my own mind, and if you watch the documentary, perhaps these would pop into your head. Number one, she states she was violently abducted and thrown into Reyes's car. At no time is she able to explain the discrepant issues between her confession, in which she admits methodically laying her phone on the ground with her hair, and her current claim that it just fell because it looked posed, at least from the scene pictures that I've seen. Now, I guess it's possible that something can fall and land in a way that looks that staged, I guess, but that's one issue, and it just feels staged. So, and when pressed about the need to use Hispanic women as her abductors, she claims that she was attempting to point investigators subtly to James Reyes, since she claims that his mother is Hispanic. I think she used the term leaving breadcrumbs that she hoped they would follow or something like that. But someone behind the camera audibly tells her they did some digging and found out that Reyes's mother was not Hispanic at all. And when confronted with this, Papini is extremely cavalier and dismissive, as if this point was a mere irritation and we should just move on. A lot of credibility lost there for someone if you were attempting to build it. So, and also, what makes it safe to reveal now? Is James no longer the existential threat that he was in 2016? Now, I'm not saying that this isn't possible. I'm just asking the question. But there are some oddities that make one wonder in the other direction. And this is somewhat more interesting to me, actually. In both documentaries, James Reyes is never seen in real time, only heard, except for photographs. In fact, the fact that he had Sherry Papini in his home and undertook a series of felonious, damaging physical behaviors to cover a crime never seems to be given the slightest bit of suspicion. And in this documentary, they play audio of the interrogation, and it clearly shows the investigator priming the pumps of James's innocence by already proclaiming him to be presumptively outside the parameters of culpability, as if he was just some willing Boy Scout chatting with investigators. Now, her signed confession may have been enough to prevent any further investigative action, but Reyes is clearly heard telling the investigators about the boarded-up bedroom window and indicates the places where they were nailed to the wall. There were apparent marks on the perimeter of the window, and this raises questions, at least, about Papini's ability to freely and leave it with impunity, and yet James Reyes seems to have avoided any and all professional scrutiny. I mean, according to the narrative, Papini was just hanging out at Reyes's house and was watching the coverage. There was no show being put on for the community in James's area because they didn't know she was there. And if that's the case, why were the windows boarded up at all? And why were her descriptions of being chained to the inside of a closet commensurate with the description in the actual closet unless something happened? In other words, did a consensual hoax with consensual intimate behavior jump the shark and become criminal at some point? I don't know. Oh, then there's Papini's polygraph test. Papini is asked a series of questions. Some of them indicate that a continued deception. However, when it comes to her being branded on her back, those third-degree burn installing processes in which the word Exodus was put on her back and are now scabs and scar tissue, her claims that she did not consent to this was verified by polygraph to the extent that the polygraph examiner states, "I'm sorry this happened to you," which creates somewhat of a problem because James Reyes tested truthful to the same question about branding, although providing the opposite answer. And of course, that lends, it casts a skeptical eye on the polygraph examination process in general. I'm just throwing this in because it is a point of interest. By the end of the documentary, Papini has not reversed her story, but she has attempted, at the very least, to shift the Overton window slightly. There's no way to tell where the truth begins, actually, and do I think it's somewhere in the middle? Honestly, I do. She admits she's a liar. The issue is, just where does the truth begin? But really, does it matter? Unless there was criminal activity on the part of James, I guess it doesn't. The damage has been done, and in discussing this subject with a few people, I found out that some generally object to me giving this subject any air at all. Okay, I disagree, though. This is, for better or for worse, a significant historical event in the Northern California area, so significant that Papini's name was even included in the lyrics to one of Eminem's recent songs. Lastly, I originally mentioned the moment in the first documentary in which a case is made that Papini was slowly attempting to poison her children via an alcohol-soaked paper towel put on her children's chest when they were sick. Now, I remember looking around the room at this point during that documentary to see if anyone else thought this was possibly a bad look for the filmmakers, and maybe for Keith as well. After building a multi-episodic case for Papini's deceptive and truly despicable behaviors, they rubber necklace her at the end as a sort of typhoid sherry on the way out. To me, this was bad form. My own mom did these exact same things with us kids when we were little. Exactly, including isopropyl rubbing alcohol put on my chest. This was the homeopathic answer to many ailments of the day. And it is clear this is something that Sherry grew up with and learned to use and probably learned from her parents and applied it. So in that being, yeah, she got a bad rap. Is she a liar? Yeah. Attempted murderer? I don't think so. And I don't think it's cool to lay that at anyone's feet when it isn't true. Vicks VapoRub became the retail answer to this approach later in life, and my mom wiped that appalling stuff on my chest when it was ice cold as well. It was mom being a mom. In the end, though, Sherry's own mother, who clearly loves her daughter and thinks that the truth lies somewhere in between, does not believe her own objection claim, however, and to her credit, she says so on the documentary. As I said, I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle after watching this, and again, it doesn't matter. Dispositions are finished, sentences were rendered, prison sentences were served, the children had paid a price either way, and the story is simply summed up in the questions Papini rightly asks. Have you ever lied? And has that lie ever been blown up? I don't know. I imagine that does resonate at some level. The docuseries still leaves the questions I asked here, though, Sherry's philosophical attempt notwithstanding. Okay, well, and I will note here, invitation extended to Sherry to come on the podcast if she ever wanted to address the questions that I've got and that I've asked. Long form and no editing tricks, but really, no one in this story answers to me. I'm just wondering. And this is box number 7.